Hey, happy Sunday, and welcome to the new episode of Meet the Hollywood Press. I am Joseph Capps, your host, and every Sunday here, what I'm trying to do for you guys is bring together a group of journalists that are on the ground here in Hollywood, covering the beat, interviewing the celebrities, breaking the big stories, and sort of let you guys in on what I find to be fascinating is those conversations that are beyond just their story on the page, their tweets, their Instagram, their Facebook posts, but real talk about the stories before the stories break, after the stories break, and really just getting inside like journalists' heads that cover these stories and what their perspective are on some of these stories and the buzz and just sort of what they're thinking when they're actually doing their jobs. With that being said, before I do introduce our panel this week, I do just want to acknowledge that we had a really, really horrific event happened this week that really, shook journalism to its core. And I just want to obviously pay respect to the victims of the Annapolis shooting before we get started. And we're gonna touch on that story a little bit later and just sort of what that means moving forward for all of us journalists really in Hollywood and all across the world. So I just want to, send my prayers and thoughts to the victims, families, and loved ones and so on and so forth. That being said, I want to welcome this week's panel to Meet the Hollywood Press. To my left, first I have Anita Bennett, who is a journalist and host covering an array of topics in Hollywood, but she right now launched her own blog called Urban Hollywood 411. She has been with The Wrap. She has been with, help me out here.
The Los Angeles Daily News.
And also KTLA.
KTLA. I wrote for KTLA.com, and I'm currently also an entertainment contributor to Fortune.com, Fortune magazine.
Thank you so much, Anita. See, I knew there was such a big list that I was going to forget one.
And we're all out of time, and that's it.
And also, I would like to introduce Denny Directo, who is host and host and producer of Entertainment Tonight Online.
Just ET Online, yes.
And also host of his own show, The Daily Denny, which you can catch on YouTube.
On ET's YouTube
Which I enjoy.
Thank you.
Very good.
I appreciate that. That's how I got this job, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, thank you.
And also joining us is Jordan Burchette, who is a pop culture journalist and host. He has been at an array of outlets. The Wrap. He used to contribute to Rolling Stone. He was the executive editor of Maxim when Maxim was a thing.
Remember those days?
CNN Go.
Well, yep.
Jordan has a long list. But anyway, welcome Jordan to the table. We're going to be starting out with my favorite topic. I admittedly cannot get enough of Roseanne Barr. I was so happy that I thought, after last week's conversation on Meet the Hollywood Press about the spinoff, I was like, it's dying down. And then Jerry Seinfeld, handed us a gift. So basically, on your show, mind you, Denny, on Entertainment Tonight. So just to catch everybody up really quickly, obviously the spinoff is a go at ABC after Roseanne's racist tweets got her original reboot canceled. And now Jerry Seinfeld decided, as he was promoting his show for Netflix, Comedians
in
Driving
cars,
in Cars,
Getting Coffee.
Getting Coffee.
I know, there's a lot there.
I knew I was going to stumble over that. So he basically was on record with a bunch of reporters promoting his show and basically weighed in on Roseanne, which we're so thankful for. But he was basically like, I don't even know why they fired her why kill someone who's dead if they're already committing suicide? Mm-hmm. And he was basically saying that the firing from ABC was overkill. So I want to start out asking, Denny, your show broke this. So first of all, do we agree? Was he right? Was her firing overkill?
I disagree. I totally disagree. I mean, obviously ABC got a lot of praise after that Swift cancellation for what a lot of people were saying was a human decision. The decision to cancel the Roseanne reboot was a human one. They did what was right. At the same time, they're not dumb. They realize Roseanne is a liability. You can't control what she's tweeting, and this is not the first time she has tweeted something that's either caused controversy, has offended people. I think this was the straw that broke the camel's back, and if they didn't make that move, I think people would have been judging them and they would have been reprimanded. Or excuse me, people would turn their backs on ABC.
I mean, you can either canter right away.
Right.
Or you can wait for all the sponsors to drop out and deal with the headlines that ensue. I mean, we know how this goes.
Well, they could consult Fox News for how to handle those.
It's interesting to me that Jerry said, oh, the show was going to die on its own. Is he not familiar with Trump supporters?
Right.
I think that they would have continued to tune into the show. But also, there was so much outrage over her tweets. And it wasn't just about Valerie Jarrett. There were also some anti-Semitic tweets mm-hmm. that same day about Democratic donor George Soros, who was Jewish. And she said
who
that
she was saying
said,
he was married. Also that Chelsea Clinton was married to his nephew, which is completely false.
And then she said he sent his own people to their deaths and she called him a Nazi. So she was just... unhinged, and I'll borrow from the Republicans, the RNC, which just released their liberal bashing ad. But anyway, you had that, you know, after the outrage, you had, or after her tweets, you had Wanda Sykes, who was a producer on Roseanne, saying, I'm done.
Right.
She tweeted that. And then you had Kenya Barris, the creator of Black-ish, who has a relationship with ABC, saying, later, look, I reached out to ABC and said, enough of this, I'm furious, get rid of her. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what Jerry Seinfeld is talking about.
I feel like Jerry was a comedian defending a comedian, but in this case, what she tweeted wasn't funny. You know, it had nothing to do with her art.
It's his default setting to always side with the comedian. It's almost his ethnicity at this point. But, like, I also don't know how serious he expected to be taken by. I mean, I don't know if he's, like, really passionate about his opinion that he, you know what I mean?
Like, I think he was sort of asked it in a gaggle of like reporters, and then it was sort of like, I don't know, I think it was over. You know how he is, because he really does give zero F's right now.
Right,
like,
right.
He's like, I got my show. Because even when they asked about, he hates the reboot like craze trend. He was basically like, they're like, what about Seinfeld? He's like, I hate that they bring everything back. It's time, you know, I like to look forward. He's like,
but bring Roseanne back.
But don't fire Roseanne.
But don't fire Roseanne.
So this brings me, he brought up an interesting point, though, here, because it's basically like with him, now me as a journalist covering this and just kind of mildly obsessed with Roseanne Barr and her tweets, good or bad, I feel like with the sitcom moving forward, he made me think about this, and I want to hear your thoughts, is that is this show ever going to escape this dark looming ghost of Roseanne, even when it moves forward? Because I feel like journalists are going to keep it alive because it's stories. It gets people talking. People are because I feel like I think the sitcom, the spinoff is semi-doomed because they're not going to get out from under. If she doesn't get off Twitter, my opinion is that this show will still be, everyone will still be talking about Roseanne.
I think it depends on what kind of creative decisions they make with the show.
Yeah.
If you make enough overtures and enough concessions, then you can actually win people back. The headlines will be less about eventually what Roseanne said and about what decisions they're making with the trajectory of the show.
And I think slowly but surely those headlines will start being far and few between. You know
what
I mean? But you're right. I just feel like it depends on the creative decision. But you know what? There's a lot of Aunt Jackie stands out there who might be tuning in. You know, right after that, they're like, let's get the spinoff with Lori Metcalf leading the pack.
Well, and where was the strength of the ratings of that show? Because if it was among Trump supporters, then you're losing all of those.
You're losing a lot of them, and
it was in Middle America predominantly. Mm-hmm. They're not going to release. I'd be fascinated to see the you know demographically on the map, like where those came from. Because Nielsen boxes, have you ever met a person in L.A. or Cal?
Never.
I've never met an L.A. New York person that has a Nielsen box.
Nielsen.
If you do, please let us know. I've never met someone with a Nielsen box.
If there was like a Roseanne ratings map that you could lay over a voting map of the 2016 election,
it would look identical.
How's that not made yet?
But
the interesting thing is the show, Roseanne co-created the show. I just don't see how the show can go on without her. I know it's been done before, rebooting a show after firing the star. I mean, look at what happened with Charlie Sheen.
Yes, exactly.
But this is Roseanne's show.
It's like Archie Bunker with that. It's like All in the Family without Archie Bunker.
Yeah. Doesn't she still have to get some money off of this thing?
No, that was the only way this was going to move forward is if she, that was her gift, I guess, as her, penance for all of this. I guess it's just, I wonder if Jerry Seinfeld just did it to get attention for his show. Because, yeah. I mean, does he really care?
Well, if he didn't think this show should exist in the first place, what does he care if she gets fired from him, you know?
And sometimes it's best just not to answer. I know reporters can ask all kinds of questions. Sometimes just don't answer.
Were either of you seeing, I think when I was doing research also this morning and looking online, was it Judd Apatow or someone then also came out and said they believe Roseanne, is crying for help? Was it Judd? I don't want to miss. There was another prominent person in Hollywood that basically came out then after this and was like, "I think it's a cry for help." So we're hearing it.
We heard it. We got it. Yeah, we got it.
Okay, so moving on. Please, someone put her back in the news next week so we can talk about it again.
Journalists keep asking questions about her.
So next, we're moving on to, obviously, the immigration protest yesterday. Mm-hmm. So Hollywood hit the streets again for I call it an anti-Trump protest because it's actually a families belong together was the theme of the march. And so big, you know, the usual social justice sort of celebrities. I like to call them, social justice celebrities, hit New York and D.C. and L.A. and
700 cities.
So some of the names were obviously like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Alicia Keys, America Ferrera, Kerry Washington, Amy Schumer, John Legend, Chrissy Teigen. You know, all the ones that are very active and very vocal on Twitter about politics. But I guess what my overarching question, because I think it's a beautiful thing, like I obviously think anyone, regardless of your field or your platform, should go out and support what they believe in. But what I want to ask is, do celebrities at this point hurt or help Trump? That's my big question in all of this.
Listen, these protests were not geared towards Trump supporters.
Yeah.
This was geared towards people who disagree with what the administration is doing.
Yeah.
People who are horrified that over 2,000 children are basically incarcerated, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Caged.
Cages.
Right. Yeah.
So this appealed to more of the liberal base.
Yeah.
But what I think is beautiful is that it rallied the base.
Yes.
And you cannot ignore the millions of people who took to the streets to voice their dismay with what this administration is doing.
You just want to think that children is like something when we say let's focus on what unites us more than divides us. And you always feel like children, as innocent as they are, would be like that one thing that unites everybody. And it's just so... it's heartbreaking to watch on a human level, on a journalist level, on any level. Because I also was reading, there literally is 3-year-olds that are standing in court with a court-appointed 3-year-olds that can't speak English. And I think about the trauma and the horror. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's pressure on those courts to process them faster and faster.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And how could you not respond to that, whether you're a celebrity or not? Because as much as we like to believe that celebrities are not people, they are, right?
Yes.
They, of course, have a huge platform, but I think that gives them even more of a motivation.
You mean they have feelings and everything?
They have feelings, blood running through their veins. Okay. They care, But if you disagree with what this administration is up to, you're going to do something about it. And they're obviously using their platform for that very reason, because they do disagree. I mean, they have these personal convictions, so it's hard not to. So whether they help or hurt, I mean, I think Trump's hurting himself.
I am personally defend a celebrity, because I think regardless of your line of work, if you're an actor on television, you're a movie star, you're a music artist, it doesn't take away your right to not be vocal.
Like, right.
We can go on any one of our platforms and say whatever we want. You know what I'm saying? And and so can anybody. So it's like there's always these more conservative voices that say celebrities shouldn't get involved in politics. Like they're people, right?
Right. It's just typically because celebrities more often than not differ in their politics from the people who are saying that.
But I like your answer. You're basically saying they rally the liberal base to get them out there and sort of help make change.
And they rallied their
fans.
I mean, I talk to a lot of millennials and they tell me that they get their news from social media.
Yeah.
And so when you have a celebrity with 5, 10, 20 million followers putting on social media, hey, this protest rally is occurring, it just informs people who don't, read newspapers or tune into the local news.
Yeah. But again, when we're talking the Trump base,
well, it's repellent.
I feel like though, as much as it's rallying the liberal base, not to get too political on Meet the Hollywood Press, but it's basically do you think that it emboldened? I feel like it emboldened
I think it's ultimately kind of a net zero.
It's like a net zero, yeah. Like, it leaves us, to me, where we're at.
Yeah.
Even though it was, like, a beautiful thing to watch. But I just hope these children, I mean, I just pray for these kids. It's heartbreaking.
And that they can reunite all the children with their parents.
Yeah.
Especially the ones that have already been separated, right?
Yeah. You know, at the border. Now, something that did stand out, though, you know, Cher was at the rally. Did any of you see that clip where she was basically like, I've never seen anything like this. This is some real-life Handmaid's Tale shit or something like that. Yeah, I think I can say that word because we're on digital.
Well, you did it.
But if not, I'm sorry. Moving on. So this next story, wow, a blockbuster here. So to give you a quick summation here, THR, a really deep reported investigative story that they came out with this week about a victim. Her name is Silai Abrams, and she basically is accusing Russell Simmons and AJ Calloway of, you know, sexual misconduct. And long story short, this story delves into that. She was trying to come forward during the height of Me Too through an MSNBC interview with Joy Reid, who, you know, hosts AM Joy. And it again, the gist of it is just that the story got caught up with questions from, you know, and from the network or whoever was overseeing Joy. And to just wrap it up in a nutshell, it again, it goes into this NBC's like chronic problem, NBC News's chronic problem with killing the Ronan Farrow story that, you know, started this movement, you know, the heart, killing that. So I guess I want to just sort of get everyone's thoughts. And Anita, why don't you start us off here? Just what do you think's going on here?
It really speaks to me about the culture in NBC with the Matt Lauer investigation. They launched their own investigation instead of normally companies hire outside investigators. And so NBC did their own investigation and found that, you know, there was no kind of burying of what Matt was allegedly doing, harassing people in the company.
Yeah.
And then you had the whole Ronan Farrow thing.
Yeah.
You had the Access Hollywood tape, which they had. But they did not release. This was with President Trump making the comments about grabbing women by the pee.
Yeah.
And so the Washington Post, someone leaked it to the Post. So it really makes me wonder, what is going on at NBC? Are they deliberately trying to suppress certain things?
Yeah. Jordan, what do you
think? This story's tough just based on what I understand of it, because even Joy Reid is on the record as saying, well, you know what, the statement was from the network, it didn't meet our standards for an airtight you know, story. And she even said, like, yeah, you know, I trust in the process here. And so, I mean, she's on the record as saying that, you know, at that point now it becomes, it's like he said, she said type of thing. We're like, I don't know, were the standards of the network being upheld?
But haven't all these cases been he said, she said?
Well, to your point, in the Matt Lauer investigation, that's a critical error right there. Mm-hmm. You bring in an independent unit to investigate that. When you don't, now you've really exposed yourself to criticism.
You mean media companies can't police themselves? What are you talking about?
I think the question is also in the process, though, because by the time we got to that network statement saying that it didn't meet their standards and practices, I mean, it had been months of them looking into it, and it went all the way up past Joy Reid's bosses, you know? So I think that's where it comes into question, where they, you know, how and when they killed the story. It's really complicated. But clearly there were receipts. If you read the Hollywood Reporter story, I mean, the receipts are there.
Yeah, you know? That's what I'm saying. And so, like, the reporting on the Hollywood Reporter story really just, like, blew it wide open of just, like, the whole behind the scenes of just step by step of when it was, you know, brought to her and then when it was buried, pretty much. Well, now it's out there.
Yeah.
Thanks. So, you know, but I think I have a theory about this, and I think that what some legacy media figures or executives are not understanding, that we don't live in the times we did 30 years ago. And I think they're still trying to apply these strategies and tactics, these PR, that the public's dumb. I mean, for lack of a better word. And I think as journalists, we're very insulted, obviously. I mean, I know I am. That there's still this idea of just, well, we're not going to comment, or, oh, it's not this, or it's like, they're still trying to apply the strategies maybe that, like, back when Bill Cosby's stuff was being buried by the, like, they don't work now. I just think we live in a a more woke society, for lack of a better word. But do you feel that there's a certain element of that?
Definitely. In the digital age, news happens fast. And so previously, publicists or companies would not respond and the story might go away. That doesn't happen anymore, especially with the internet. I mean, I can send you a clip like with the Access Hollywood tape. If they won't release it, all it takes is someone uploading it and sending it to a reporter.
Yeah.
Right. So many more ways to leak things. My curiosity, though, regards the fact that so many of these incidents are happening under the NBC Universal banner.
Right. Yeah.
So are they the ones, they just have the most dinosaurs at the executive level, or?
It's funny, because there is a certain, full disclosure, I did work at NBC Universal years ago when I was the managing editor of AccessHollywood.com, mm-hmm. a good 5 years. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of legacy executives within the ranks, but remember now, with the whole buy and the consolidation of Comcast coming on board, there is like a new layer of management that are like smart and savvy, but they're still sort of legacy people. And if you actually do the investigating, and without me mentioning names, you will dig into the departments that are troubled that end up having these legacy hands in there. So it's not hard to figure out. I think when a new company is sort of like acquired like that, and there was obviously a lot of issues there, but I think that with the Me Too movement in general, that the enablers aren't being held accountable. It's like, mm-hmm. you get Matt Lauer, but then it's like, who was Matt Lauer's boss at the time? Who was Matt Lauer? Like, we know how this works. We work in the industry. We work in newsrooms. We know people gossip. We know people talk when there's bad behavior. Right. I just think there's a certain level of like the people that committed the crimes, the people that covered up the crimes, the people that enabled the crimes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you're not like cutting out that whole cancer altogether, then it's like,
it's like the Subway posters about, you know, like leaving a bag, say something. Right?
Yeah. If you see something, say something.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I just have to, you know, hat tip to I thought this was an excellent, I read this from start, excellent reporting, Hollywood Reporter. And with that being said, we're going to move on, unless you guys have any more thoughts on that. Like, no, I don't want to. Everyone's like, not me too.
Not me too.
Not me too. Okay, so this is moving from something heavier to something lighter. Okay, so I got to get your guys' feet on this, because you know how much tolerance I have in Entertainment Tonight. I think is a completely different animal in mm-hmm. how they cover celebrity. I like it because it recovers it respectfully. But the site that broke this story is not that kind of celebrity coverage. So basically, there was a report that broke that Jamie Foxx and Katie Holmes split up. Okay. Obviously, blind source, like it usually is at these like gossip tabloidy kind of sites. And so basically, it was like that situation where it spread like wildfire that they broke up, and then Katie's high power, you know, Hollywood publicist, Leslie Sloan, mm-hmm. released then a statement on an opposite platform, People Magazine, which is a more respectable publication, right. mm-hmm. to say that that story is like 1,000, was it 1,000% or 100% untrue?
She said 100% untrue. On the record.
On the record,
they
yes.
said it was Katie's rep.
Exactly. Right? But she just said that story was untrue, but didn't say like they're together.
Because so that's now the thing, they never actually confirmed the relationship. No one has. You know? So mm-hmm. it's been long rumor that they've been linked and together and a couple. And so when that story broke, she said that story's lied, but but I'm not inferring anything else, you know? Like, it's just saying that that radar story is not true. So that's where...
So did she ever confirm, because you would know better than I, did she ever confirm on the record that they were together? No, that was never confirmed.
No, that's never happened.
So then I guess it's like, that story's false, because how can you break up if we never confirm you were a couple?
Yeah, I mean, in my personal opinion, I'm just kind of like, who cares? although I was at the BET Awards last weekend, and I was like, Jamie Foxx hosted. I was like, where's Katie? But really, these are not reality stars. These are two
yes
working actors, Jamie Foxx is a host.
Yeah, like,
yeah, people yeah. with thriving careers in Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not knocking reality stars. I love reality shows, but these people put their whole lives on social media, who they're dating, whatever.
They talk about it openly.
They talk about it openly.
That's their brand.
Yeah, that's their brand. Yeah. And that's not the case with these two. They've never come out publicly and said it. There have been paparazzi pictures of them together doing various things. But again, it's just like, do we really need to get in these people's bedrooms, private lives?
I think what I just am curious to just ask you guys, though, as a journalist standpoint, it's like, we've been doing this dance for years, and I feel like when you sort of have the situation where one publication reports one and another one goes with the opposite story, but then does this ruin a relationship where, like, I find it to be really hard to then do stories and work with publicists that are like, you got to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to be. So it's like, she's a pro, by the way. She handled, Leslie Sloan, by the way, handled like Britney during like the head shaving because I was at Access Hollywood. So I think it's what you just said. It's like, they've never said they were a couple in the first place. So why is Radar?
How does that make the story untrue, though? That, what I'm trying to resolve in my mind is how she defends her use of that term, it's untrue, just because she never confirmed. If they were together, we just didn't confirm it, and they just broke up, but we didn't, the story's not untrue.
But it's also publicist speak. She didn't say they were never dating, or they did not break up. They are still together. They're planning to get married. She didn't say that. So you kind of have to read between the lines of what she said. But honestly, I don't think I don't want to say tabloids, but they are tabloids.
Yeah.
Certain publications, they don't care what celebrities say, and neither do their fans.
Yeah.
Those sites in particular don't care. Sites like us, we do, you know? So that that comes into play. I mean, let's be honest here. It's all about relationships. So if it's coming from a gossip site and the rep is saying it's not true, they never confirm the relationship. And plus, let's be honest, she represents some high profile stars that matter to our brand and our audience. Mm-hmm. Then the story for us is like not worth it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that we gave that the attention it deserves.
And if you're Anita, far more than it deserves.
I know, right?
I mean, but I did admit, I was like, where's Katie?
I see, you were looking. You were looking.
To the level of, like, celebrity romances at the point I am in my life, it's like, I think Ariana and Pete Davidson are adorable together, and that's what I say. Like, great for them.
Right.
Then there's, like, all these, like, haters online that are going, oh, my God, they just met and they just got together. And it's like, who are anyone to say? Like, you know, like, when people are supposed to get together or not.
I wish it happened that fast for me.
Okay. If it's right, it's right.
Just you know. You know exactly. They're just hating.
Let's move on to some fare that we actually could all sink our teeth into. So apparently, again, I don't know when this is going to stop, but like, can like music artists that are super talented just like maybe write their own stuff? Like, I think that we're at this point, and I'm saying like, basically Ed Sheeran and Donald Glover, who goes by Childish Gambino. His This Is America song and then Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud both this week are being accused of, like, ripping off other people's material.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's actually start with the Donald Glover, because I want to, like, we're going to listen to the clip where they mashed the two songs together, and then we'll pick the conversation up. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping up. I'm young and I'm black in America. They try to attack and embarrass us. Y'all don't want your daughters to marry us, but they let us dick, so I tear it up. Broke all my chains. Money's my language, but I'm nobody's slave. Open my eyes. Yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, this is gorilla. Yeah, I'ma go get the bag. No type of bullshit, I require silence. People wanna bottle my virus. Sneezed on the track, it came out of my sinus. Look how I'm living now. Police be tripping now. Yeah, this is America. Guns in my area. Police killed my best friend, they shot him dead. I do not forgive, I do not forget. Okay, come back in from that. Who wants to take this first? Who feels... Jordan, you're pretty passionate about it. Go ahead, Jordan Merchette.
I think Donald Glover, he personally has a lot of credibility with me.
Yeah, I love him. I think he's super talented.
And I kind of feel like... This time, this was a little bit more compelling than when I just listened to them independently. We had this conversation before going to air.
Yes.
But I still feel like people who think that those songs sound alike just think all rap songs sound alike.
Mm. Nah, I am a fervent hip-hop fan, not the misogynistic songs. But anyway, yeah. That sounded like the same song to me. So all I have to say is, open your checkbook, Donald.
To the naked ear, it sounded similar. You know, I'm not a music expert, but it did sound awfully similar. However, I think the original song, we'll call it the original song, so not the Childish Gambino song, the artist actually took to Instagram, right? American Pharoah. He said, let's not let this controversy take away from the message, because they had very similar messages too, right? They're like, let's not take that away from the impact. He knows that that song is saying something, well,
the,
right?
The point he was making also, though, is that hip-hop is a medium in which sampling is existential to the music. So he didn't decry it, but he also pretty much acknowledged, like, I think he pulled from my...
Yeah, the beat sounded very, very similar.
Can we all agree? Because, see, my point, and maybe this is me being, like, all kumbaya about it, but, like, I feel that, like, when artists are creating music, they have favorites, just like we all have our favorite music. And I don't think they necessarily set out, but it's, like, almost like they're inspired by. Mm-hmm. It's almost like an homage to the other artists. Like, I do believe that it's, like, nothing but love for, like, I like this song. Yeah. It's, like, similar to it. I feel like if I was, like, the ruler of whoever governs this, like, in, like, the Academy or something, there should be some leeway built in for, like, inspirational, like... What, like, the way we do in news, like, fair usage. Like, you're, like, news fair usage. Like, what sort of could be maybe, like, there's this gray area here. It's, like, an inspired by track,
well,
you know?
We'll see
it's
how this plays out, because Don Glover's producer says they have Pro Tools files from 3 years ago. American Pharoah came out 2 years ago, right. I think. So they're going to settle that eventually.
He deleted that tweet, though, by the way. He said that, and then he deleted it. Right, yeah. So,
the producer did?
Who said we have those ProRes files or whatever from 3 years ago.
Oh, this is getting good.
So now it's like,
stay tuned.
Maybe you couldn't find them, you know? But it is a gray area. It is complicated. And in fact, that's why, if you guys recall, in 2016, Pharrell Williams and Robin Thicke were being sued by Marvin Gaye's family, saying that Blurred Lines ripped off What's Going On.
Gotta Give It Up.
And I mean, a lot of artists were rallying behind Pharrell and Robin, saying this will set a precedent.
Yes.
If the jury rules that they did borrow from the original material, then it sets this precedent where it's like artists who are influenced by these artists maybe don't set out to copy them, but there's like an influencer that you hear, then they have to pay royalties. That sets a weird weird thing.
I smell a segue into the other song from this
movie. Oh, thinking out loud.
Right.
Let's listen to this other song. Was I supposed to know lyrics, JB?
And I can't sweep you off of your feet. Will your mouth still remember the taste of my love? Will your eyes still smile from your cheeks? Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Okay, let's come back in from that. Do we have the...
Yeah, I think she has.
I thought that was a mash of the Marvin Gaye. Bear with us, please. Apologies. That might be on me. Okay. Okay, so we don't have the other audio up.
Well, everybody should know. Let's Get It On.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's
rhythm sing a bar.
I was just about to ask. So I was like,
Danny, could you sing a bar?
I'll do Ed Sheeran. We'll talk about how similar they are.
So Marvin Gaye's family is just, like, looking for anyone that basically is ripping off the music.
So here's the thing, though, where Marvin Gaye's family were the ones suing Robin and Pharrell, this is actually not... Marvin Gaye's family is not suing Ed Sheeran, an investment banker who has one-third of the rights to Let's Get It On, is making sure that his investment... stays.
I think he's got a better case than the Marvin Gaye family had.
With Blur Lines. I agree with you, actually. Yeah. I didn't at first until we were playing that bass line together, and then I started singing.
Oh, it's unmistakable, especially the way the percussion comes
in. The percussion, the drums in that bass line in particular.
I guess my more curious question then here is, do you think artists are setting out to purposely steal the material. They just are inspired by the artist, and it's more of an innocent thing, but it's going to cost you to basically...
I mean, unconscious plagiarism is still plagiarism. Yeah. You can unwittingly rip somebody off and not even realize you were inspired by it.
Yeah. So then what's your feeling on this? Like, you are you do you
err
open
on up
the
your
side?
Checkbook like an idiot. I still gotta open up that checkbook.
Show me the money.
But Joseph, I'm kumbaya too. I'm thinking, okay, they're just influenced. You know, they remember that percussion that they like. But that being said, the law says something different, right? It could be a feeling, but to be fair. And you know, sampling does happen a lot in the music industry, and people pay for
the
tracks. They pay for the tracks or for the music and stuff. So I like to think that they aren't doing it, you know, consciously. But
like, if I'd never seen the Nike logo before and I was like, hey, I got a really good idea for a thing, and I came this on all kinds of t-shirts and stuff. I was like, well, I'm going to came up with
right. So true. And let's forget, too, it's not just an artist. There's so many people who are helping produce these tracks oftentimes, you know? So it could be an influence from a mixer, from, you know, producer, maybe not Ed, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just a celebrity defender.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that insight, because you guys are way more like music buffs than I am. But I did find it to be fascinating, just because when he released the song, I thought it was great. He released it during his like SNL hosting gig. Remember that? He dropped the video during hosting it, and I was like, I thought it was really, really cool, especially around what was happening in the country at the time.
It's impactful.
Okay, so now we're moving on to somber topic, unfortunately, and then we'll but the whole Annapolis shooting, obviously, in the newsroom this past week. I want to just sort of get... I don't want to... obviously, we're not CNN. We're not MSNBC. We don't need to relive, like, the details. But obviously, people... a gunman went into the newsroom, and people were killed. And it's really sent shockwaves sort of through the industry that we work in. And I guess I want to know what you guys are hearing. Like, are you hearing anything on the ground in terms of... Because I was trying to ask around quickly, like, this morning about, like, has Hollywood... Because I didn't see any articles online, which I found to be interesting... from Hollywood about, like, what is Hollywood newsrooms maybe like? Are they on alert for this? Have you...
I mean, I think having gone to interview people in various studios and whatnot, studios have pretty good security.
Yeah.
It's more newsrooms I'm concerned about.
Exactly.
A couple of years ago, I worked in a newsroom where there was absolutely no security. There was just a receptionist out front.
Yeah.
And I actually sounded an alarm to the publisher, to my bosses, saying, we might need a little security. And we worked together at The Wrap. The same thing happened with the Charlie Hebdo attack in France.
Yes.
Anyone at The Wrap could, and we were like right on the street, anyone could have just walked in the door. And after that, the owner, you know, God bless her, she installed what is it called? The card system.
The key fob.
So she heightened security after
that.
But I think a lot of, you know, in America, we're very reactionary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just feel like scared for journalists right now. You know, but like, do you think that this has to do with where we're at and the tone of the country overall? Like, is it like that's the big argument? When I'm looking on Twitter, even from Hollywood journalists, the argument seems to start lying in the fact of is this the rhetoric of like Trump hating the media that's like spilling over, or was this an unfortunate thing that was going to happen because the person had an axe to grind anyway?
That was the first thing I thought when the news first broke. Like, there you go.
Yeah.
This is what you get. But I'm not sure in this specific...
Yeah.
I'm not sure that in this specific case you can draw a line between Trump's rhetoric and the actions of that dude who had a history with that publication, and he's already crazy going in and had, you know. So, but I don't think that... that should do anything to discount the discussion that we're having about that, because like we're reaching towards a breaking point. There's always a breaking point. Do you remember 17 years ago when we were all American?
Yes.
I mean the world. Because it took like two buildings coming down and half the Pentagon taken out, and then for like 10 minutes everybody was American.
Yes.
That was a huge breaking point for things to cool out. We are, you know, the pot is simmering. I'm just wondering, like, when's the breaking point?
That's what's so frustrating, right? Because we were all talking about that it has to get really, really bad for it to maybe get a little good, you know?
Right.
So it's heartbreaking. I do believe that in this particular case that crazed man had a axe to grind.
Yes.
But it does, you know, it opens up that discussion about journalism, too, you know, that byline.
Yeah.
It holds a lot of weight.
Yeah, and also just I think that it gives me pause just how journalists in this day and age live on in a multi-platform universe. Mm-hmm. We track our moves. We are on Instagram. Mm-hmm. We're at this premiere. We're at that. I mean, it's very easy to locate people. You know, I think it's I think it's just an unfortunate thing that it's just the times that we live in. And I sound like an old person saying that, but it is scary.
Well, yeah, because I mean, if you're younger, you don't know any other times. Yeah. Life is just crazy. That's all you ever know.
Life is crazy.
That's true.
I mean, the president's words don't help. Yeah. So I hope that he will be more careful about what he tweets. Mm. But also, I was in Spain a couple of months ago when the attack happened at the high school in Florida.
Yeah.
And it's a societal problem. People in other countries, you know, maybe South America is different, Latin America, Mexico. I don't want to bash Latin America. Mexico. Yeah. But people in Europe, I was going to school there, taking some Spanish classes, and people were horrified, and they didn't understand how there wasn't outrage in America. You know, as the only American in my classes, they were asking me, why does this keep happening? And it's because there are so many guns in this country, and things don't change.
They don't.
Well said.
I also wouldn't count on Trump's tweeting to change.
I'm hoping.
I'll hope right along with you. I ain't holding breath, though.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, well, that being said, I want to move on to a segment that we call here every week on Meet the Hollywood Press, Overheard Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I give all of my guests an opportunity to basically tell our listeners and viewers something maybe that you've worked on this past week or something you're already, you know, working on for next week, but anything in Hollywood that you just find interesting, something you might have heard at an event this week, anything. Mm-hmm. It's like your open platform. So, Anita, tell us, what do you got for us?
So this past week on Urban Hollywood 411, I had a story saying that the BET Awards, they've been held in L.A. since 2002, that they might leave BET's contract with AEG, which owns LA Live, where the awards are held. The contract ended with this past BET Awards.
Got it.
And so I got a statement from BET and AEG, a joint statement, saying that they are going to discuss a contract extension for 2019 in the near future. That being said, I personally don't think the awards will leave. They could go to Atlanta. I overheard this backstage at the BET Awards. Hollywood Insider was talking to a BET employee, and I was sitting at a table with them. And I asked about it, and then I said, do you mind if I report this? And I reported it all on background. But anyway, award shows, it's plausible. Award shows generate so much money. I did some math, and according to studies, the Grammy Awards they generate $82 million in economic activity. That's a lot of money. And so these cities are all competing to get a year. Are competing to get these shows. And the Academy Awards, $67 million. The city of New York, when they announced that the VMAs were going to be in New York this year, they said that the show generates $50 million in economic activity. Now, here's the thing. The BET Awards generate more because they have a 3-day music festival leading up to the awards.
That's right. And then there's also there's like events like even before the official 3 days that start being peppered
in. We're talking about a lot. The BET experience. So we're talking about a lot of money, and Atlanta's probably trying to steal the awards away.
Is anyone else surprised that the Grammys make $15 million more than the Oscars?
You know, there was a group, called Micronomics. It's a local research firm. And I did a story on this 2 years ago, and they said that with the Grammys, with musicians, these people are coming from around the globe, and they have these large entourages, and they bring in all their people, and a lot of the Hollywood types who go to the Oscars live here.
Right.
Now, you do have people coming from other countries and whatnot for the Oscars, but it's not on the same level as the Grammys. And these are folks staying in hotel rooms, spending money on transportation, food.
Right. And then with the Grammys, just the sheer number of categories, too.
And
nominees.
That's true.
There's just so many people who are nominated. And even within the five names, that's like five groups. That's however many people are in each group, too. So you're right. Just the sheer number of people who actually have to be here for that
true.
Is a lot. Yeah. good for LA.
Just kidding. Denny, New York is always trying to steal the awards away.
Right, right. They got a couple recently, yeah, like Grammys last year. I do want to plug Daily Denny. It's of course you mentioned it at the top of the show. Yeah. It is, for lack of a better word, I describe it as a version of ET on YouTube, hosted by yours truly. It's weekdays, Monday through Friday, on ET's YouTube channel. And this summer, my B is every summer my B is America's Got Talent.
Oh, right on.
NBC's number one summer show.
But I love that show.
I do love that show. And honestly, the talent this season, there's one more week of the first auditions, one more golden buzzer on the line. I've been talking to a lot of contestants, the judges as well. That content's on every Wednesday on Daily Denny, but also on etonline.com. But it's going to be a fun summer.
Do you have that buzzer that says we're tired?
I do.
Oh, my God.
I do. You're going straight to the live shows.
Yeah, no. I was terrorizing my last team all day long when I would keep hitting that buzzer because it's like, Tyra going, you're going straight to the last show.
I love it. I love it. But you know that show is so good at tugging at the heartstrings. Like, I just am a sucker for those sappy stories. And then they perform and you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a lot of them and like they're literally coming from nothing. So it's really inspiring and I've been covering it all summer long. So come hang out with us.
Awesome. Yeah, great. Jordan Burchett.
I got to tell you, man, my journalist bucket this week's a little shallow.
A little shallow.
So overheard in Hollywood for me this coming week will be I live in Hollywood.
Yeah.
In the immediate vicinity of my house, you will overhear quarter sticks of dynamite going off and dogs barking in terror on the 4th of July.
Yes. Oh,
as people in the area, totally with reckless abandon, ignore local ordinances.
It's like the Purge. Oh, it's like they go crazy. It's
Hollywood Purge.
Hollywood Purge. Fireworks light everywhere. Yeah.
Thank you to all three of you for stopping in today on Sunday and dishing on all these topics. And thank you to everyone listening and watching. And also have a great 4th of July week. Come back next week where we bring you another three journalists from Hollywood discussing what's going on next week. So thanks for tuning in. And I'm your host, Joseph Capps, and this is Meet the Hollywood Press.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.